Hello and welcome to Growth Coaching International's Coaching in Education podcast. I'm your host, Richard Reid, and I'm delighted to be bringing you our third episode in a mini-series called Stories from the Coaches. Ordinarily on the podcast, I'm in conversation with a school leader who shares something of their school's journey developing a coaching culture. But in this series, we aim to look at things from the perspective of the GCI coaches and trainers. In this episode, we are moving outside of Australia to neighbouring New Zealand, and I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by Dr. Nikki Knight. Nikki is an education consultant and founding director of the Education Group, which is an independent consulting company based in Auckland. Nikki is also the director of Growth Coaching International in New Zealand and coordinates the implementation of a wide range of coaching workshops across the country for GCI. Nikki is a senior practitioner with the European Mentoring and Coaching Council and has presented at a number of local and international conferences in coaching. Nikki, it's just great to have you join me on the podcast today.
Thank you very much, Richard. Absolutely delighted to be here, and kia ora tātou. So that's hello everybody in Māori.
Fantastic. The pleasure is all mine, Nikki. Looking forward to the conversation. To start with the first question, and similar to the previous two episodes, can you share with us your journey and experience in the world of education? And we're talking prior to joining GCI, and maybe outline your current role in the team at present.
Thank you, Richard. I'd actually like to start off with a whakatauki, which really describes or exemplifies my journey before GCI, and this is continued. It says, "Mā te huruhuru karere te manu." It says, "Adorn the bird with feathers so it may soar." And I think that's probably what has underpinned my journey. In other words, me supporting people to be better than I am. My background, I have a primary teaching background, having trained in New Zealand, and in the early 1990s made the decision to work in teacher education rather than be a principal. I think it was probably a defining moment in my journey. This probably came from an inherent desire to reach a broader audience to make a difference in education, and also from my love of mathematics and science. And my doctoral work was in mathematics education. I did spend some time at the University of Auckland teaching mathematics just very briefly, and then joined teacher advisory services. So they were supporting teachers in schools and worked in a wide range of schools and curriculum and appraisal. So one of the directors of the institute at that time, Kay Hawke, ended up supervising me for my master's degree. So I ended up joining her at Massey University at the Institute of Professional Development and Educational Research. This is quite important, this group, because I guess we honed our skills in facilitation and we delivered professional learning to teachers. I probably didn't really appreciate it, but a coaching approach was how we operated. We left the institute together at the end of 2004, and just as you said, we've set up the education group, and liberating in the sense that we were working for ourselves. So every day we are in schools, we're delivering a wide range of services to schools, and some of those areas are leadership and governance and curriculum and pedagogy, performance reviews. And we do get called into schools when they get into strife to help support them. We also facilitate quite a range of professional learning groups. And I think the real benefit of this type of work is that we're at the coalface, and we certainly appreciate firsthand all the successes and challenges that schools are facing. So that was pre-GCI. And then, of course, the education group was going along nicely, and we ended up, Growth Coaching New Zealand ended up becoming a subsidiary company of Growth Coaching International. So we deliver all of their workshops. New Zealand put the I in GCI, so Growth Coaching International. We were their first international partner. And very successfully, we celebrated our 10th anniversary this year. We deliver a whole suite of the GCI coaching programs. I think they've really added depth and breadth and value to what we're doing already. And we deliver these programs face-to-face and online. Online was probably initiated, facilitated by an international pandemic. So it pushed us into doing that, whereas we may have gone into that area a bit more slowly, but it's been a fantastic direction. So my job currently, as well as a director of the education group, I'm director of growth coaching New Zealand. So I oversee a team of overseas, probably a bit exaggerated. We work very collaboratively, but we have a team of 5 directors and 2 associate directors and 3 consultants. I also am very fortunate to be part of the GCI strategic leadership team, and that meets 4 times a year. And I really hope that I add an international perspective to some of the conversations that we have. And I also help review the GCI programs on a pretty regular basis, because we're facilitating. We have a lot of knowledge of what's working, So I think that's probably a brief potted history of how I got to be where I am. Actually, passionate for learning and education, and every day I feel fortunate to be working in this space.
Yeah, it's a fantastic journey, and lovely just to hear, as you describe those different sections, you know, how it developed, you know, starting out as a primary school teacher, which I started out as myself many years ago, through to, you know, setting up, you know, the education group. And you use that term, you know, freeing and liberating. And then obviously now the connections with, well, originally growth coaching, and now, as you folks have added to it, growth coaching international, with the international element, which is terrific. As you think through those years, and I suppose those earlier years, Nikki, can you think of any specific skills or insights from those previous experiences that you find really valuable in the current role you have with GCF?
Definitely. I mean, our job is all about relationships, and we get work because of our relationships. And so I guess it's the importance of your way of being and, you know, building empathy and trust. Also, my previous work has helped me figure out what works and what doesn't, and leading change. And of course, many people are being coached to be supported in change. I learned how to challenge people in a very kind and caring way and take them out of their comfort zones so they still felt safe to do that. I learned always that we were always facilitating people first and content second. And that's been a really good lesson for me to learn, because being a pretty task-focused sort of person, I had to always appreciate who was sitting in front of me first before, you know, delivering whatever it was that they had asked me to deliver. I learned how to design professional learning, because that's what we do as a job. And one of the most exciting things that I did with one of my business partners, and I know you know this, and in conjunction with GCI, was we created the students coaching students program. So in conjunction with GCI, Rowan Higgy and I wrote that and trialed it in New Zealand schools, and that's been amazing. And I know you've done a number of podcasts on that. I've learned the importance of listening and questioning, and also quite interestingly, for us being culturally capable, and that's about taking time to understand who the person is sitting in front of us, where they come from, their ethnicity, and what is important to them. So I'd like to think that all my previous experience has stood me in good stead.
I think it's interesting, when you started out that initial answer, Nikki, straight away you went to the word relationships. And I love that thought. You know, we get work through relationships. And I suppose, you know, it's interesting when you think back to the mathematician side of you, and maybe that we bit of a, you know, a challenge where you're thinking it really needs to be people first and content second. And I suppose the realization that, you know, over a period of time. But I love that thought, culturally capable. you know, and actually being able to, I suppose, see the person that's in front of you and realize that that's the starting point. And very much you're stepping out of your own story into their story when it comes to coaching, but also when it comes to training. And you've mentioned the fact that, you know, you develop and design professional learning experiences for educators, and you've got the experience of having been in school, you know, in many ways in the past, receiving training, and I suppose can use that insight into developing your own versions of it. As part of the coach training team, obviously you work with educators who are new to coaching, and there's a lot of teachers, a lot of educators across the country, well, globally, who still have yet to experience what coaching is. Would you say there is one key principle that you would emphasize during those early stages of training? And how might that really benefit both the educator being trained themselves, but also their students back in school?
So, Richard, I found this extremely difficult to get down to one key principle. So I'm going to...
I'm stretching you.
So I'm probably just going to break the rules a little bit.
That's okay.
Many of our coaching work is based on benefiting the educator, and of course when we get to students coaching students. So this is probably some of my messaging around benefiting the educator, and we certainly hope that there are flow-on effects to students. If I had to pick some things, it would be that coaching is a partnership, and it's one based on equal partners. And also it's about solutions construction and strengths based. So it's not problem focused and it's not advice giving. I was reading a phrase, Richard, which I actually really liked. It said it's the use of non-pathological interpretive framework. So I thought, well, that sounds quite interesting.
Wow.
Now, what that really meant was that problems are not indications of dysfunction, rather, they indicate a need to try different perspectives. So it's solutions focused and very much strengths-based. So I would definitely highlight those. And then I'm going to completely cheat in my answer to this question and say that Jim Knight's partnership principles have always resonated with me, and I think they form the foundation of what we do. So just to remind people, those are about equality, equal partners in a conversation, choice, communicating in a way that acknowledges the professional discretion of others, positioning the coachee as the decision maker, voice, hearing what others have to say, dialogue. Coaching is a conversation. Engaging in conversations that look back forward, that's reflection. Praxis, definitely learning in action. Reciprocity. And I think Jim says that conversations should be life-giving, and I always want that. So I've completely cheated on your question. But So solutions-focused, certainly strengths-based.
Fantastic. We've done a tremendous job narrowing that down to one. Hasn't that been terrific?
No, I did a terrible job narrowing that down to one. That was really hard.
To be honest with you, the other folks have been very similar, which I suppose is a good thing. I suppose that's a good thing. If you think back, you know, through, well, those numerous different qualities and strengths that you talk about, you know, is there a success story in there in your experience, you know, where an educator's coaching journey has had a really significant impact, you know, on their role and also on the role of their, or the experience of their students?
So again, this is probably more focused on an impact on a principal. So I think every so often you feel really proud that you've ended up making a difference. And I think this was just one example. So I was coaching a principal of a primary school, and she was, so in New Zealand, primary schools, well, all schools actually are governed by a board. And the board has a governance role, so I think you're well aware of that. So this principal had a new board presiding member, so that's like a chair of the group.
Mm-hmm.
So during our coaching conversation, the principal talked at length about her new presiding member and how she wanted him to do things differently. And differently meant more like her previous presiding member. So I listened for a while, and I thought, I think there's a question here that I could ask that could change the direction of this conversation. So because she kept on reiterating what she wanted this new presiding member to do differently. So I said to her, well, what might you do differently to support this new relationship? as what I was noticing was she was talking all about what she wanted him to do. And as often happens, there was silence. And then you sit there thinking, this can go either way. And it was a real aha moment for her, because she was focusing on what she wanted other people to do differently. And I think she realized that maybe if she did something differently, that it might have a different outcome. So I said to her, what's happened in the past when you've had a great relationship with your presiding members, or even with this current new one? When do you think, you know, the relationship's going really well? And she said, when he talks about his children. And then I said, when else, being a good coach, said, when else? And then et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so I said, well, how might you build on this? And so she eventually said that at the beginning of the meetings, the weekly meeting she had with him, that she was going to spend a little bit more time just chatting, just getting to know him personally and his children. And then I said to him, because being a coach, you want to sort of nail down some specifics. So I said, tell me a little bit more about what that's going to sound like at the next meeting that you have with him. And she said to me the next meeting that that conversation had been, I'd like to say life-changing, but that's probably a bit grandiose, but certainly it had a significant impact on her relationship. I don't know, Richard, I can't comment about the impact of that conversation on students, but certainly it had a significant impact, because they have 3 years in this relationship, and if it wasn't going well at the beginning, it was going to be a tough road.
But I think that's the important thing, that you mentioned the word relationship, and for you as a coach, you know, that's the direction of travel that you were thinking about, is, you know, we're actually trying to focus on the relationship here, not the actual performance of what's happening. And that brings us back to your earlier comment, Nikki, people first, content second. You know, so it's not the role that this person has. Let's start with the relationship that you have with this person, which is a lovely example, and thank you for sharing that with us. The field of education, as you know, Nikki, in your role, is constantly evolving. How does your work with Growth Coaching International adapt to stay relevant and address the changing needs and challenges of educators in today's world?
Well, first of all, we're very fortunate because we are in schools every day, apart from when we're facilitating workshops, and we're talking to educators about the issues and trends that they're currently facing. So we also read widely, and we have many discussions with colleagues and also my business partners. I think probably even more importantly, our participants in workshops will often make suggestions to us. And for example, when we were talking about a coaching way of being in our workshops, we had some participants said, you need to more closely align the coaching way of being with Māori tikanga. So that's the customs and traditional values, and also what we call te ao Māori, which of course is a Māori world. So normally when we hear a statement like that, we say, well, how might we do this? and we get a lot of rich information back. And so we do consult a wide range of people to help us stay current. We also have a cultural advisor, Jeremy Hemmer, who supports us in being more culturally capable as a group. The other thing we do is we challenge ourselves to write articles. And in the last two GCI Insights articles in June and November, Jan and I had written two articles. And the first one, of course, was on cultural capability as a way of being in Aotearoa New Zealand. And the second one is sustaining a coaching culture. Those take us outside of our comfort zone, but we love talking to people. So by writing, which can be quite challenging in itself, it's just a great process. Hopefully, Richard, if I could sum up, we take advantage of every opportunity, and we just keep talking to people, because we don't know everything by any stretch.
But I think it's really reassuring to listeners and to educators who are going through coach training with the like of yourselves and with GCA in a more broad sense, to know that you folks are challenging yourselves. you know, to sit down and write an article or to put a discussion piece together that just pushes you outside of your comfort zone that little bit. And even to hear you, like you say, you know, we don't know everything, we haven't got all the answers, I think is quite encouraging for the listeners, because certainly educators don't have all the answers at all. So when we're all in that boat together, you know, at least we can move forward in a similar direction. Are there any, you know, recent or upcoming developments? I know you design a lot of material in coach training that you think is going to be particularly beneficial for educators?
I mean, I thought this was a really interesting question and quite challenging to answer, really. But I think probably if I had to say one thing to start with, it would be supporting the conversations that teachers need to embed new practices. And I think that this is actually seriously underestimated. Shifting thinking is really hard, and supporting teachers to change their practice is challenging for them. And I love James Clear's book, Atomic Habits, and that yes. highlights, I think, how challenging it is to change any habit. And of course, teachers who have been teaching for a while have habits. for us in Aotearoa New Zealand, it would definitely be understanding cultural capability. And that's about knowing and understanding culture, customs, beliefs, doing culturally appropriate actions and behaviours with our coachees. But also, I think more importantly, as coaches, being aware and open of challenging our own beliefs and values. As Jan and I indicated, sustaining coaching in the longer term. So we have many of our schools that have been on this journey with us for a while, and that's the thing that they want to do. How do we sustain this? How do we embed this into our fabric of how we do things around here? So I think those are some of the developments for us. There's one other person I would like to mention, and very much New Zealand writer, Russell Bishop. Yeah, so he has two texts. One is called Teaching to the Northeast, and the other is called Leading to the Northeast. And Northeast educators have strong relationships and strong pedagogy. And of course, he also focuses on the importance of relationships. So he's very much aligned, but he's writing some really interesting material quite recently.
I think that idea, you know, your initial thought there of embedding new practices, I think that's absolutely right. And I think that's probably on a global scale. You know, any educator right now listening to this episode will know either within their own school context that, you know, embedding new practices is a challenge. It's a challenge for us individually. I know for me as well, you know, we can do something this year and say, right, we've got that sorted. What are we moving on to next year? Because I think with the best intentions, we want to keep trying new things. So the idea of embedding things properly isn't always a default position for us as educators. So I think bringing that to our, you know, attention, Nikki, has been helpful. And that word sustain, that word sustain has come up a number of times, you know, sustaining coaching. We're all gung-ho and enthusiastic about starting the process, but creating something that is sustainable is very, very important. And that's why I think sometimes stories from the field, you know, where we can see examples of schools that seem to be successfully sustaining coaching is very, very important, you know, because there is, you know, changeover of staff. Obviously, pupils are, you know, moving through, and this will be the same for yourself as students coaching students. You have to be able to put things in place that are going to last, you know, a sustainable amount of time. So that's been really helpful, you know, to bring that to our attention. Are there any common obstacles in your experience, you know, through the training and coaching world, or misconceptions that educators encounter when transitioning into coaching roles? So people are coming from, you know, knowing very little about coaching, they're really keen, they're enthusiastic, they want to move into a coaching role. And how would you assist them in overcoming some of those challenges?
So teachers are highly skilled at giving advice. So learning to hold back can be challenging for some. And Michael Bungay Stanier's books, The Coaching Habit and the Advice Trap, I think are excellent resources.
Yes.
But certainly that's often one obstacle that is mentioned by a number of people. Secondly, educators feeling, coaches especially, feeling that they have to fill in, we call it the white space. In other words, Sometimes it's hard for educators to just be really comfortable with silence. So teachers, teaching coaching, people have to be comfortable with the uncomfortableness of silence sometimes. And, you know, by using coach can use those phrases, go on, tell me more, what else, and then just wait and not fill in the space. As a coach, replacing judgment with curiosity, I think is a good thing to think about. And I would say most importantly, common obstacles, that listening, and I mean really listening. And I love Simon Sinek. He says, listening is not the act of hearing the words spoken. It is the art of understanding the meaning behind the words. And listening is hard work and takes effort and energy. And a great coach needs to listen intensely. I think probably just one of the other things, it's just some coaches, when they start out, feel very insecure when they're unfamiliar with the coachee's context. And I think it's about just knowing that coaching is a process and that you can coach anybody on anything as long as you are confident in the process. You don't need to be familiar with the context. So that's always a thing. The last one, that particular category, I'd put sometimes younger, less experienced coachees coaching highly experienced educators. And that's not a barrier. Some of our younger coaches can be absolutely superb. So age or experience is not an issue. That's about the experience in coaching, I think. Okay, so what do I do to assist people overcoming these challenges? Well, hopefully I model effective coaching to them. I hopefully ask good questions, great questions or powerful questions. I really like seeking feedback from my coachee at the end of a coaching session, and I'll often say, how was that session for you? What was what part of that conversation really helped you gain greater insight or move on?
I think the fact that, you know, at the end of a coaching conversation, the fact that you're asking that question again is encouraging for listeners. You know, you're asking the coachee, you know, how did this land with you? And you're asking it openly, you know, with an open mind, expecting feedback, and expecting feedback that you're going to then take and, you know, allow that to affect the next coaching conversation you have, hopefully in a more positive way. I love that phrase you use, Nikki, the white space. And that's something that, you know, we all as coaches, you know, start initially to struggle with. And I suppose on an ongoing basis, you know, there's still that uncomfortableness around silence in a conversation. And we as teachers inherently talk a lot. That's what we do. We were paid to talk a lot. And I suppose that, you know, that habit over years and years and years is hard to change. As someone who has coached educators through, well, various stages of their careers, and you've been in the job now long enough to have done that, Nikki, can you share maybe some insights into the personal growth that educators can expect from embracing coaching as part of their skill set?
First of all, definitely increased confidence in leading and embracing change and just leading in schools. To have the confidence to think about moving further up in your career, whereas before you may have been very comfortable just staying where you are. I would also say understanding the impact of different types of conversations and how they can influence the outcome. So, you know, in the moment conversation or a sitting down for an hour, I wish, to have a conversation. An hour is a very long time in school to sit down and have a coaching conversation with anybody.
Yes.
But certainly understanding the impact of those different types of conversations. I'd also say that they become more reflective on how their conversations and questions impact others. I'd like to think that they benefit from increased awareness, increased motivation to achieve goals. I know that's certainly been the impact on me. More effective communication skills and just being, I think I've said it before, being aware of how they can influence different interactions. I think they gain, if I have to kind of sum up that, gaining greater insight into their own practice and why they do the things they do.
But I think that when you mentioned the word confidence there, you know, and I mean, educators by and large are reasonably confident people because we're in front of essentially an audience. You know, it is a bit of an act, you know, regardless of what age group we work with. But when you move into the coaching world, you know, initially, yes, you can feel a little bit vulnerable because you're doing something very, very different. But I think as you realize, as the training goes on, quite a lot of the skills are there you didn't realize, and they just need to be, you know, tuned and honed a little bit. And that's where the like of yourselves coming in, you know, to train these people can really highlight what's going well and what they actually have to offer, you know, in a coaching context. So that's, I suppose, where the confidence grows for educators. This last final question, Nikki, which I think is going to be an interesting one, particularly in your role designing professional learning, which is just terrific, and the experience you've had with that. And the question simply is, what do you think might the next big thing be in coaching and education? Maybe I should say the next big thing that you're going to design. Maybe that would be a better question. In general, is there something that you think is on the horizon, or you might like to see on the horizon in coaching and education?
I think, Richard, this is not really my idea, but certainly I could not do a that, so I've done some. Using coaching to support well-being, I think this is, especially if you can think about the last 3-4 years that we've been through, and I know Christian Van Nieuwenberg's going to be doing some real, is doing some fascinating work in this area. So using coaching to support well-being. We're still going to be looking at sustaining coaching cultures in the longer term. We still want to work in that. We still want to work on being culturally capable and the impact that that can have on a coaching conversation. So these are the next big things, I think, and really using Jim Knight's instructional coaching has been around for a long time, but really focusing on improving teaching practice. In New Zealand, we have a brand new curriculum coming out with, not necessarily new, but a focus even more explicitly on pedagogical practices. So we're going to be really busy, I think, coaching our educators on the implementation of that curriculum and also how to really embrace those pedagogical practices in a very multicultural society. So there you are. So that's not that next big thing. If I had to choose one, it would be, there's never just one thing. There's always lots.
That is not a problem. Not a problem at all. Nikki, it's been lovely to have you, you know, highlight, you know, a number of things that you see coming up within coaching and education. And it's just terrific to know that, you know, the like of yourself, you like yourself and your colleagues are going to be involved in driving that in many ways. So I suppose exciting times are very much ahead of us. Can I wish you well as you continue to lead the GCI work in New Zealand? Today's episode will give a great boost to not only educators listening in New Zealand, but indeed to educators at a global level, where there is a genuine passion for the importance of coaching in education. For our listeners, please check out the GCI website, where you can find out more information on upcoming coach training courses. And equally important, you can source some terrific free coaching resources, including access to other podcast episodes. To stay in the loop with GCI events and resources, you can subscribe to our monthly Coach Ed update, as well as Insights, our online publication, which comes out twice yearly. In the meantime, I look forward to catching up with you all again on the next episode of Coaching in Education, where theory and good intentions meet reality.